I haven't preached in about 3.5 months. This might take a while. Would you pray with me? Holy One, silence, or at least help us to silence all of those voices that clamor for our attention. The internal noise. That we might be able to listen deeply to our soul and to be startled by that voice that calls us beloved. Amen. One of the gifts of my sabbatical, many, many gifts, but one of the gifts was be able to spend 5 days golfing in Scotland, the home of golf. This was, for me, this was an absolute dream come true. And each course that we played, we had a caddy. And these were what's called lifers. These were gentlemen, Scottish gentlemen, who've been carrying a golf bag their entire life. These were Scottish gentlemen who had this amazing ability. I paid very close attention because they could make any profanity sound absolutely poetic. I've been trying it. It just doesn't seem to come from my mouth in the same way that it came from their mouth. There was one particular golf course I played called Prestwick, which is one of the oldest golf courses in the world. It's where the first British Open was played in 1860. And I think my caddy of that day caddied on that day. But I'm kind of disappointed that you can't see. It's in the upper left hand. Well, that was my caddy that day. I wish the picture was a little clearer because he could be Billy Connolly's twin brother. And he also kind of possessed Billy Connolly's sense of humor. So there I was at the first hole. And I had a perfect drive. You might find that hard to believe, but it was a perfect drive. And on this first hole, there was a 4-foot fence, a stone wall, that bordered the right side of the hole. And there was a 40-mile-an-hour gale wind blowing across to the right. So I hit this perfect drive, and I got a 9-iron, and I hit my 9-iron up into the air, and the wind caught it and carried it over the stone wall out of bounds. So I dropped another ball, and I hit it. This one a little better, but it's still, the wind carried it. It bounced once, hit the wall, and careened toward the green. Now, from where we were, you couldn't actually see the green. So when we got up there, everybody found their ball. But me, where's my ball? And my caddy checked the hole. Okay, he added one more word to that, but I won't. So I looked up, and lo and behold, there was my ball in the hole. A routine par. So I was like super excited, got up to the second hole, so excited, I swing way too fast, and duck hooked it into the scrub. And my caddy, without missing a beat in that beautiful Scottish accent, said, "From heaven to hell in one swing." And I laughed, and I laughed for, I laughed for 5 days straight, which is, I didn't stop laughing. Our mission statement, creating spaces of grace to cultivate hope, healing, and purpose. I discovered one of the spaces of grace is time itself. Just time itself. Notice how often we say, I'm running out of time, or I don't have enough time. Well, all of us were graced with the gift of 24 hours today. No one any more or less than the other person. So time, perhaps, stays the same. It's our relationship to time that changes. And so often the demands of life, right? The demands and the pressures and the stresses and the worries of life have this nasty habit of creeping in and stealing from us the awareness of the sacredness of each and every moment. Well, the gift that you graced me with was the gift of time. To just breathe and create a spaciousness where I could actually listen to the depths of my soul. That I believe your soul is always speaking. It just so happens, though, that the demands of life and the worry and the regrets and the pain and the stresses of life are so loud that we don't create the space to listen deeply. A gift of immeasurable worth that you graced me with was that gift to listen. One of the places, one of those spaces of grace, as I mentioned with the children, was Australia. I began my ministry 25 years ago in Australia, so it was a going home for me. And one of the things I wanted to do, the Flinders Ranges, is a sacred place for me. It's a place where I just feel God. The mountains there feel like they're zillions of years old. And I was sitting around a campfire at night, and the sky, the night sky, was do we have that slide? Was that doesn't do it justice. But it was like you could reach up, touch the star, and put it in your pocket. And the Milky Way. Now I'm from northern Minnesota. I'm aware of the northern lights. This was the Milky Way. And it was like I could grab one end of it. I mean, truly, it felt that close. Like I could grab one end of it and wrap those stars around my shoulders like a blanket of grace. I felt so small and so insignificant. While at the same time, I felt a part of something so much greater than myself. You know, it reminded me of the rabbi who has a card in his pocket. And on one side of the card it says, "I am but dust." You're reminding all of us of our frailty, our humanness, our limitations. But you turn the card over and it says, I am made of the same stuff as the stars. Reminding us of our place. You have a place in the universe. Reminding us that we're all connected to the source of all that is. That we have this deep, profound, mysterious connection to the source of love that brought it all into being. And we're intimately connected to that love. Another space of grace for me was an afternoon in Madison, Wisconsin. You hear Jenny and I quote from time to time a gentleman by the name of Parker Palmer, who's an author and speaker. And I was graced with the opportunity to sit on his porch, just he and I in Madison, and drink tea and talk about life. And it's still working. You know, when people ask me, "How was your sabbatical?" I wish I had an elevator speech. And I hesitate even responding because I know it's still taking shape. It's still working its way in me and with me. But Parker Palmer would ask the question that I ask you today. Is the life you're living the same life that seeks to live in you and through you? Let it sink in. Is the life you're living the same life that seeks to live in you and through you? Parker would say our vocation, our calling, our sense of purpose in life, he said, it's not a goal to be achieved. It's a gift that we receive. He said it doesn't happen by grimly determining life to go this way or that way. He says it happens when we create the space to listen deeply to our soul. You know, our soul is a great compass. Our soul is that innate sense of life's direction, of life's purpose, that innate sense of life's meaning. And if we listen, you know, we know when we're kind of disconnected from that, when we're off course. You know, our soul is that sense of connection, that we are part of something so much bigger than our little lives. Our soul is that profound connection with the source of all love. And that profound sense that love seeks to live in and through us. You know, what happens is our small self, you might say our ego, every day kind of pulls us subtly off course. And you notice that sometimes we don't even notice that we're off course until we're way off course. And then it shows up in irritability and exhaustion, stress, emotional and physical illness. The challenge for me post-sabbatical, the challenge for all of us, is to create those spaces to listen. I really profoundly believe, I had the gift to go to Australia and go to Scotland, and I'm so grateful. But it has far less to do with location than with intention. So one of the places, as mentioned, that I went to was Scotland, the island of Iona. And as I said, it took me a three-hour train from Glasgow, about an hour and a half ferry from Oban. Okay, I stopped and had some scotch. But then a bus ride across the island of Mull, and then a short little ferry ride to this incredible island that's 3 miles long and a mile and a half wide. And there's an abbey there built by St. Columba in the 5th century. The Vikings came in, not the Minnesota Vikings, those other Vikings came in and destroyed the abbey, and it was rebuilt in the early 20th century. But pilgrims have been going to this place for 1,500 years. 1,500 years, people like me have been going to this place to seek God. And to listen. Can you imagine the spiritual energy, you know, of that? This incredible place. The Celtics call it a thin place, where the veil between heaven and earth is very fine. And it felt that way. Even you could see it when you landed, when the bus dropped you off to the ferry place. You looked at the island and it's... So most afternoons, I would sit on a bench on a hill, overlooking the abbey and the water. And I would just settle into sacred silence. And the presence of the moment was different. I was aware of the presence in each moment. The presence that we miss when we're preoccupied, that we miss when we're going from here to there, that we miss when we're worried and stressed. That in each moment, there is this presence. The grass was greener, I swear to God. The water was a blue that I had never known existed. and the sheep nearby. They seemed like old friends. They really did, like they just were desiring to share stories of the last 1,500 years. And I listened to my soul. Because I think when we listen to our soul, we hear that question, is the life you are living the same life that seeks to live in and through us? This is our annual peel time. And I tried to delay my sabbatical for a couple weeks. Jenny made me come back. This is an exciting time. Investing in hope, healing, and purpose. I love Mumford & Sons, and they have an incredible song called Awake My Soul. And one of the refrains in that song is, where you invest your love, you invest your life. Where you invest your love, is that worthy of your soul? One of the things I was aware of on the island of Iona that became abundantly clear sitting on this bench is I used to think surrender was like this. Kind of this weak resignation. And then I realized that in this weak resignation, I was still in control. I was controlling the way in which I would surrender. And sitting on that bench and being aware of the presence in each moment, I realized that surrender is this. Try to, I mean, you don't have to get up, but just go like this for a second, and then go like this. Can you feel the difference? Can you feel the difference? It's Jesus, not my will, but thy will be done. Can you feel the difference of that? The freedom of that? That to me, as I think of investing in hope and healing, to me that's setting free the life in Christ that seeks to be alive and awakened and to live in and through us. You know, loosening our grip, that very vibrant life is set free to heal, to love, heart to heart, community to community, person to the world. I understand you've been, thought I might get to the Bible, that you've been exploring Bible stories, that God has been animated through Bible stories. So I didn't want to come in today and, okay, we're abandoning that. I want to share a story. I think one of the most interesting stories in the entire Bible, the story of Jacob and that dream he had about a ladder. Do you remember it? What's the camp song? We are, how's that go? Anybody? Help me out here. Do y'all go to camp? You know, let me give you a bit of a background. You know, Abraham and Sarah, I think you talked about them a little, week or so ago, maybe. And Abraham and Sarah called in old age, and they were told in old age that they're going to be a blessing. They're going to be blessed that they might be a blessing. How cool is that? And much to their amazement, I'm going to skip Hagar and Ishmael. But we really do need to come back to them another Sunday. But today I'm going to skip them. Much to the amazement of Abraham and Sarah, when they thought there was no hope, they had a son, Isaac. And Isaac grows up and marries, falls in love, which is really interesting because in Jewish time, love wasn't part of it. Love wasn't really part of families. It was all about productivity and reproduction and caring for the family, not love. I mean, you were told who to marry. But Isaac and Rebekah fell in love. And they married and they had a son, two sons, Jacob and Esau, right? Esau was the firstborn, came out first. And in that time and age, the firstborn was the father's favorite, just the way it was. And had the rights of inheritance, would get the father's blessing. So all of the property, all the wealth and the fame and the fortune would go to the first son, Esau. Now Esau also, the Bible says, Esau was a huntsman. It actually says he was handsome, rugged. Jacob, it says, was quiet, kind of hung in the tent with his mom, Rebekah. And he was Rebekah's favorite. But Jacob was obsessed with acquiring the rights of inheritance, all of that wealth and all of that status. He was obsessed with it. So one day Esau was out hunting, and he came back famished, tired, exhausted. And Jacob was cooking a stew. And Esau said, "What do I need to do to get a bowl of that stew?" And Jacob says, "Give me the inheritance and father's blessing that is due you. Give it to me, then you can eat." Now, Esau must have been hungry. Like, I've been hungry before, but I don't think I've ever been that hungry. He agreed. He handed over the rights of inheritance and the rights of the blessing that he might have some stew. Well, time goes on, and it gets worse. Time goes on, and what happens is Isaac at this stage is nearly blind and close to death, and it's getting to that time where he needs to give his blessing to his eldest son. So he tells Esau, "Go hunting, come back, make my favorite stew. We can have a final meal together. And Esau, I will give you my blessing." So Esau's out hunting, and Rebekah and Jacob scheme up this elaborate plan that Rebekah helps Jacob to look and to smell and to even feel with animal pelts like Esau. And so Jacob takes the stew into Isaac, looking and smelling and feeling like Esau, and it works. Isaac blesses Jacob and gives him the inheritance. Well, when Esau comes back, he's not happy. I mean, this is great made-for-TV stuff. He is incensed. And he says, "I hate you." And he threatens to kill his brother. So now Jacob has everything he thought he wanted in life. He has the inheritance and the property and the status. But ends up fleeing for his life. And Rebekah helps him to leave. And here he ends up in the middle of a wilderness, banished from his home, banished from his family. No tent, no pillow, rocks for a pillow. And there Jacob, at his weakest, at his most vulnerable, everything stripped from him, he encounters God for the first time. And he hears the voice, the same voice that spoke to his father and grandfather and grandmother. Genesis 28, real quickly. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. He reached a certain place and spent the night there. When the sun had set, he took one of the stones at that place and put it near his head. Then he laid down there. He dreamed. He saw a raised staircase, its foundation on earth, its top reaching the sky. And God's messengers were ascending and descending. Suddenly the Lord was standing on it, saying to Jacob, "I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will become like the dust of the earth. They'll be spread out to the west and the east and the north and the south. Every family of earth will be blessed through you. I'm with you. I will keep you. And I will bring you back home. I will not leave you until I've done everything that I have promised." When Jacob woke from his sleep, he thought to himself, "Surely God is in this place. And I didn't know it." You know, dreams are big in the Bible. Dreams are really big in the Bible. I've always, in my entire life, wanted to be T.D. Jakes. You know, the preacher? Because he has this preaching handkerchief. And you always know that he's kind of working it up when he kind of... There, my dream is fulfilled. Dreams are important in the Bible. The Bible's full of dreams. Walter Brueggemann, an Old Testament scholar, says, you know, during the day we keep the lights on and the power on 24/7. But at night, in our vulnerability, through sleep, we allow our soul to be addressed beyond our feeble attempts to control our world. It's a couple things about this passage that amaze me. One is how unpredictable God is. Now, generally you think it's Jacob's job to get his act together, right? It's Jacob's job to kind of come to his senses, get his act together, and then kind of go back, apologize maybe, and go back and seek God in a holy place. Right? Right. In here, it's God who comes to Jacob. It's not Jacob who goes to God once he has his act together. It's God who comes to Jacob in the midst of his mess. It's God who comes to Jacob and seeks Jacob. And in the midst of that mess, promises Jacob, you will be a blessing. Promises forgiveness, promises restoration, promises homecoming. What's amazing to me in this story is here is a God who comes to us in our mess. Here is a God who comes to us in our doubts. Here is a God that even Jacob's guilt could not separate him from God and God's promise of blessing. Here is a God who comes to us in our failure. Here is a God who comes to us when we're just not as strong and good and honest as we would like to be. Here is a God who comes to us and says, I will never leave you. And a God who summons forth the very best in us. You know, I think of that ladder, that dream, and we could talk for days on that alone. But I wonder with this ladder, with the messengers of God ascending and descending, whether it's the very best of Jacob being called forth, recognizing he is who he is, as we are who we are. We have our weaknesses, we have our faults, we have our frailties, we have our fears. God doesn't wait till we have our act together. God meets us where we are and says, you will be a blessing. I think that's amazing. When I think of our theme, investing in hope, healing and purpose. What I'd love you to hear this morning, mostly, is how invested God is in you. How much trust God has for you. You know, God doesn't say, all right, First Presbyterian Church of Bend, get your act together. Once you get your act together, once you are decent and in order, then we'll go about the business of blessing the world. God says, I know you have your fears. I know you have your struggles. I know you have your stresses. I know you have your pains. I know you have your conflicts. I know how disorganized you are. I know what kind of lead pastor you have. But I come to you. Because I also know the life that is in you. The life and the love that seeks to be lived through you. And I invite you and encourage you to trust that, to listen to that, to set that life free. So there I was, sitting on the bench above the abbey, holding the rock that I placed in this baptismal font, praying for you, thinking of many of you who are going through some really hard times, praying for you, praying for the dreams that God is seeking to awaken in our midst. I am so excited to be back. I am so excited about what's going to happen in this community and how this community is going to be in the world over the next 5 years. And I was praying for all of that. And as I was praying, honest to God, there was this pod of dolphins that just showed up in the water in front of me. And they just started to dance. You know, just, you know how they go in the air and then down and they circled around and they... Now, when I think of Scotland, I don't think dolphins. But there they were. And I just had this incredible sense of feeling part of something so much greater than myself. And just feeling so loved that I couldn't help myself. I literally got off my bench and I found myself and laughing, filled with so much joy. May the life we live be the life that seeks to live in and through us. May it be so.